Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Emerging Enterprise Radio, featuring high-growth companies and their trusted advisors.
Welcome to another episode of Emerging Enterprise. I'm your producer, Kevin Friend. Are you sure? And finally, we have Van Baird in the studio with us, the normal host. He has escaped Jake Dudley's car.
He had
basement,
me in that trunk for three freaking weeks.
Three freaking weeks. So he took over the show a couple weeks ago. So Welcome back.
Well, thanks. I did miss it. And actually, I couldn't make it the Friday Jake was on. So he came on to talk about Hive Gathering, which was held right across the street at Rome,
which is an awesome venue
here in Dunwoody. It really is. The wood is amazing.
It really is.
Great wood there and good coffee. With Land of a Thousand Hills.
But that's all you need in life. Good wood and good coffee.
That's our motto. So, yeah, it's good to be back on the air. We're killing it in the small room right now.
Exactly.
But let them come on. I actually had the not-so-better half of one of our guests in the room that day as well, which we'll talk about. But the Hive Gathering was meant to bring people together, and we actually have two guests on the show today that met at the Hive Gathering but act like they've known each other forever, and that's what Hive Gathering is all about. If you show up at a Hive Gathering, you will meet
an OMG connection.
For sure, is what we had. So we're going to kick it off actually doing a quick recap of the Hive Gathering, and then we're going to give our guests a couple of minutes to talk about their respective companies. But we've got Molly. Of all the names I'm going to mess up, it's Heacock, right?
Heacock.
Okay. How do I get your name wrong? Libba right? But
where's that last name from? What's the origin? I have to know.
Well, my husband's from Boston, but he looks very Icelandic.
Okay, you're not sure. That's what you saw him. You're like, you look Icelandic. Yeah. This is going to happen.
Yep, it's true. And Deborah Libba.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I wish I had an applause button right now.
We should, because that's a butchered name, to say the least.
All the time.
Nobody gets that right.
Nobody.
So, of all the ones I mess up. But Molly, you are with... I'm going to get that messed up too. Care for AIDS.
Yes.
And we've got Deborah is with Wellspring Living. I love it, the Twitter handle. Y'all ran out of room like we did.
We did. We ran out with the G.
Yeah.
It's out there in life. Somewhere.
How you living? We live in Wellspring. So.
You're not going to be on their PR.
No.
That's what it looks like.
You're not.
Wellspring Living.
Not holding auditions for the development
team.
No, we're not.
It's
okay, though.
So, but. The Hive Gathering is just a meetup of local entrepreneurs, lots of nonprofit peeps, and we had it back on the 12th. And how did you guys even hear about the Hive Gathering?
Oh, well, I guess the first time was their gathering last year that was in Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
And a good friend of mine, Krista von Borstel, who works at Land of a Thousand Hills. Yeah, Krista, she's fantastic.
She is.
She was volunteering and saw on her Facebook. And so everyone connected, and I knew Jake through... I think everyone knows Jake by way of three different people.
Yeah.
I think people know Jake more than they know Kevin Bacon. Like, it's easier to get connected to Jake.
2 degrees of Jake.
2 degrees of separation. And so that's how that happened. And there you go.
Okay.
And then ended up showing up and hearing Chris Carniel's amazing talk, and then got connected to volunteer at this Hive.
So you're a vet of the Hive.
I'm a vet now.
Okay.
Two Hive gatherings.
She's addicted.
You a vet.
So.
Yes, it is. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. And Molly, what about you?
I had seen it on social media, but this was the first time that I went. My coworker sent us an email, and we decided to do it as kind of a team bonding activity. So our whole team of three ended up going, and we had a blast. We'll definitely have to go to the next one.
Was there food? I always want to know if there's food.
There is a little.
Sorry. There's a little food.
Queso and spinach dip.
My two favorite things. Well, no lie, those are my two favorite things in the absolute world.
Well, it was meant to connect people, and you guys were able to do that, waiting in line to talk to Hannah Brencher, who's going to be good one day with her speaking.
She'll get there. She'll get there.
Was amazing, and she will be on the show next month talking about more love letters and what they're doing there. But
huge.
Lots of stuff coming with that as well. But I think everybody wanted to meet Hannah that night. It was really, really good. So what was y'all's biggest takeaway, though, from the Hive Gathering?
I think just a more clear understanding that things shouldn't be siloed across industries and across nonprofits and across social good spaces. I think in order to keep things moving, it's to have continued conversations, like the activity we did where it was coming up with an idea and sharing it. Every single person around that table was from a different perspective.
Yep.
And that they landed at the same place. And so it was really cool to just visually and tangibly see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway was probably from Hannah's talk. Mm-hmm. She does something so specific that not a lot of people, it's not like a field that you can get into, love letters. But she had these universal truths that she talked about that really cross all fields. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to get people in a room, some of whom are working on, you know, sex trafficking, some AIDS in Africa, some local stuff here in Atlanta. And we can all connect over some very basic human themes. And I thought that was really, really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stuff that sticks with you for 5 minutes and the stuff that sticks with you for a lifetime just based on those different interactions that you have. I've actually been on a social media fast this whole month. So I haven't been online in a while. And she was doing that talk about, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean you see a tweet about a cool video. Mm-hmm. It's what talk, what connection have you made? And I think that environment that night is so unique in that it's just an altruistic, hey, who can we connect you with? So your business, your company, your organization, your nonprofit can go further, faster. And that was really, really, really cool. So respectively, then did y'all debrief by chance after? I mean, what as an organization, what are y'all looking to get out of? How are you going to maximize your time there?
With Hive, yeah, we did. We debriefed briefly.
That's why it's called a debrief.
And I mean, a lot of things that we talked about were way more practical for us, which was, I don't want to say it was shocking, but it was definitely a neat surprise. It helped us to kind of hone in on, man, how can we, like Hannah did and like the other speakers that night, how can we translate what we do that's very specific and, you know, across an ocean into some applicable universal truths that will help us connect with new and unique audiences. And so we actually started brainstorming, you know, on the car ride home that night with how can we translate what we do into something that, you know, aside from the social good and aside from helping people, how can we impact people's lives here through that story?
Yeah.
So that was huge for us. And that's something that we'll continue to talk through in weeks and years to come.
We can tell our children and they can tell their children.
Exactly.
Just pass it on down. So, well, let's give some more meat to that, because you do represent a couple of organizations that are doing phenomenal work and they happen to be here in Atlanta, which is, in my opinion, just a hotbed for social good, social entrepreneurship, and it just seems like it's an incubator of for a lot of companies. Let's talk about Wellspring Living first.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about how you got started and what they're all about.
Okay. In that order, or do you...
No.
Okay. Probably easier to start with the latter. What Wellspring Living is about, we have two residential treatment programs for victims of human sex trafficking. People who've been in Atlanta for years now know that that is a topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not just something that's hidden any longer. It is a conversation that people are bringing to coffee shops, having on the radio. It's not hidden any longer. And Wellspring's working to bring that to the forefront and actively provide aftercare services for the victims. We have two programs. One works with minors for ages 12 to 17. The other one works with adults 17 to 25.
Okay.
And so how I got started was when I was in India, I had kind of heard about human sex trafficking. This is in 2011. And randomly sent in an email to interview somebody on their staff. And then she said, well, when you get back, make sure to connect. I was like, sure. No way.
Right,
but okay, sure. I'm sure you've got thousands of emails and loads of volunteers and all of that. But I sent in an email and then connected with friends actually that worked there. And then a year and a half later, I was working there.
How about that?
How about that?
And you were there as the...
Oh, my role has changed quite some bit. but now I'm the Institute and Research Program Coordinator.
Okay. So what do you do for them?
What do I do? So our institute has got a couple of different aspects. It was started 2 years ago, and what we're working to do is encourage and promote other organizations that are trying to create residential housing and other aftercare programs. And so the institute works to do training, networking, and mentorship. And we have a program designed where I have 10 clients, 10 other organizations that are working to cultivate programming. And so I basically coach them along. We create a work plan from start to finish, and that's what I do. And it's very relational. It's incredibly relational. And because I did work in programming, I have a context at least a little bit, I've had a snapshot of what the reality of behavior, the reality of trauma, the reality of care looks like. And it makes my job really cool because then I get really nerdy about it. And that comes across if you talk to me for 5 minutes. So,
such a nerd.
Yeah, I'm a total nerd. Anyway, but yeah, it's very, very cool. And I get to have conversations that are very intentional, like the one this morning with a lady from Pennsylvania who just wanted to know more.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, you get to kind of wave that flag and
I get to be in a little bit of everything. I get to be a part of program development. I get to be a part of other people's program development and awareness all at the same time.
Right.
So,
anything like coming down the pike we should know about?
Not at the moment, not with us, other than we're being very intentional with trying to continue those services and define. This hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
Okay. On a national level, there's just not data to back, you know, a lot of best practices across the board. So we're being very intentional with, I guess, communicating and collaborating with other people in the space. Shared Hope International, IJM, what are they doing? What are GEMS doing? All those other organizations. And that's what, you know, a mutual friend of mine and Molly's is really excited about is what is everybody else doing?
Yeah.
And how can we bring that back to what we're doing and how is it applicable? So, and then that relates to what I do.
Right. Yeah. Well, then the collaboration.
And it's all the sharing. Yeah. It keeps that conversation moving.
Oh, well, then no wonder Hive was
Hive was all about.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, yay.
Yeah, for sure. So, from a socially minded organization, why is collaboration such a big deal?
I think because it's so easy to get in the rut of being in either an organization or an idea or a social enterprise or whatever. Or a nonprofit in Africa and getting tunnel vision and getting stuck. And it's very easy to just keep spinning your wheels versus looking outside to see what everybody else is doing. Especially if it's not been done before, it's very hard to say, well, where do I go? Who do I ask? And understanding that other industries may have best practices that could be replicated in what you're working on.
Help you build your roadmap.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Help you build your roadmap, and especially when the map's never been built.
Right.
So, but I think that, and it breeds the culture that it's okay to fail, that it's okay to try something, and that you continue prototyping. That's what design thinking's all about, which I know, you know, Plywood People encourages that continued cycle of you create something, you test it, you prototype it, you get feedback, and you start all over again. Right. And that's what collaboration does.
Yeah. And, you know, we work so much in that social good space where people have a faith or a faith-based organization coming out of a church. And I think we see that a lot in churches. We're turning to the business world for direction because there is a business side to it, and to reach that out in that collaboration space needs to exist for sure. Where you get the sharing ideas, promoting ideas, where do you see that resolving problems for you guys? I mean, like, are other companies coming in and with real ways of saying, hey, we can fix this? And there are examples of that.
They're coming through ways of kind of looking at what residential housing, for instance, has looked at. For us, it's residential.
Right.
So it's the aftercare services. Mm-hmm. And specifically for that, it's looking at what is already being done in residential housing for youth or being residential for adults, and kind of taking those best practices and combining them and then having conversations, having open dialogues. And it's really exciting to see other organizations having webinars to host different people around the table and say, this is what's not working. This is what is working. This is what we could be doing. So
it's really encouraging.
It's
the business aspect. It's so important to these nonprofits is learning these business practices so they can grow and scale so they can focus on their mission-based stuff.
Well, and it's not even scaling at some point. It's more just being sustainable.
Yeah.
It's being a resource to the population you're serving, regardless of what that is.
Yeah. Well, we've had so many guests on the show that help direct different nonprofits, like the guys at Root Radius. They've done a lot of work in that area. And, you know, it's getting from an idea which you own and you're, you know, passionate about, which I guess after listening to Hannah, I can't use the word passionate anymore.
You can't. It's been ruled out.
It's been ruled out. I'm not dying.
Not in your vernacular anymore.
I'm not dying for certain things. but, you know, when it's that spark, it's that idea. And without that collaboration, without the other input, you get burnt out, you get mad, you get angry. And to keep it fresh and to keep those outside voices that are, you know, that you depend on and sharing. So any success stories from other parts of the United States, other organizations that have called you guys up and said, hey, we're trying to get the same thing going. Mm-hmm. What are some stories like that you can share where you're seeing success in other areas?
So we've got, I guess there's two ends of that spectrum. There's people that were out there before us in different aspects. So Gems out of New York, they've actually kind of been a mentor. Rachel Lloyd is their founder, and she's amazing. If you haven't had a chance to read her book, Girls Like Us, this is her plug. But that's what got started there. And then, for instance, there's an organization we connect with. They're called Gateways in New York, and they've got a breadth of organizational programming. But it's successful. Mm. They're doing really great. And there was a webinar where all three of us were on it. It was so cool to kind of high five and be like, yeah. This is working. And it's working in those small aha moments.
Sure.
So when I take that back to the smaller organizations that are just getting their 501c3s or just getting moving, it's easy to say, hey, it's okay. They've been at this for years and are just now seeing success. They're just now getting traction.
So you're helping them manage expectations.
Manage expectations and that reality that this specific project isn't a turnaround in a year and you're going to see numbers and you're going to see success. It's a commitment.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys all learn from each other's scar tissue as well, so it saves you from making the same mistakes.
And I think that's probably sometimes the most valuable piece of it is learning what didn't work. What failed, which direction. So when you're starting at the onset, you can avoid all of it and go ahead and set yourself up to stack that deck for you.
Right. So. Or they could just call Jeff at Plywood and he'll just tell
them. They could.
What it takes to be successful. It's amazing at having those conversations. Molly, I was actually met a few of your coworkers at Hive and didn't even know this organization existed, much less here in Atlanta. And that was why I was one of the reasons I was there was just to meet other organizations. So tell us a little bit about Care for AIDS, because very unique organization, and I don't think enough people know about what you guys are doing.
Awesome. Yeah. So Care for AIDS works. We're based in Atlanta, but we work in Kenya to mobilize the church essentially to care for men and women who are living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya. And the way we do that, it's you're talking about degrees of separation. It's like one degree of separation. Right. That everybody knows somebody who's worked in Africa or been to Africa or, you know, loves Bono. So they help with AIDS. And so it's almost like we can get lost in the huge amount of noise about it, as opposed to Wellspring, who is making huge headway in something that no one knew about 5 years ago.
Right.
AIDS, everybody has known about, since the 80s. And so the way that we work with HIV and AIDS in Kenya is very unique. Our focus is actually on orphan prevention. So in Kenya specifically, 60% of the orphans are directly related to the HIV and AIDS crisis. So there's this entire generation of parents who are contracting HIV and dying of AIDS, leaving, an average of 4 or 5 kids. Each parent is dying and leaving them as orphans.
Right.
So if you can imagine just this nation of orphans who will grow up with no, leadership abilities, very little guidance, all these horrific things right in the middle of this continent that is at a time in history where they could become this great seat of innovation and technology. And it's like, it's the new Renaissance, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
We have to make sure that the next generation can continue that on.
Right.
So Care for AIDS works with parents. We don't work with orphans. We prevent orphans by caring for their parents. And on average, it's amazing. I tell everybody I drank the Kool-Aid like the second I looked at the website, and I basically begged Justin Miller for a job when I heard about it. But so we work with parents through a 9-month program that's based in a local church in their community. And all of the people who work directly with the clients in Kenya are Kenyan nationals who live in the community with the clients.
Right.
So it's very grassroots. It's very community-based, working out of a building that's already there, the local church, where, the whole seat of the community is in the local church in Kenya.
Right.
So it also provides a little bit of anonymity. You don't necessarily, in a country where there's a whole lot of stigma that's still around, it's essentially modern-day leprosy.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to walk into a building 3 times a week that says, I have AIDS.
Right.
So you're going to the church. You're already plugged in your local community. And throughout the course of the 9-month program, our clients, it's a group of 80 that goes through at a time in each center.
Mm-hmm.
And they receive all the medical skills, the medical education that they need, how to take their medicine, how to take enough water to make the medicine work. Right. They get the nutrition that they need for their entire family for the course of that 9 months. They get training on how to manage finances, how to start small businesses. They get the skills with which they can start small businesses.
Yeah.
Peanut butter making is like a huge thing
We
started teaching.
That's cool.
And so then they're able to start their small business and sustain their family, essentially. And through living an extra 25 years on average,
wow.
we're extending their lives 25 years.
Yeah.
They're able to pay for school fees, raise their kids, send their kids to university, and train their kids up to be the leaders of tomorrow. So far we just opened our, I think, 23rd center in
wow.
Kenya.
Wow.
So that's 80 awesome. Clients every year in 23 different areas in Kenya. And last time we checked, those clients who have been through the program since the beginning represent 10,000 dependent children who
wow.
aren't orphans, who could have been and probably statistically would have been
yeah.
orphaned.
Sure.
But today are being raised by their parents.
That is huge right there.
It's amazing, when you, especially when you consider it's not next door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a world away.
It is.
And to be in a nonprofit where you've got to raise that kind of money for something we can't see on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
the amount of money that y'all funnel there is truly amazing. I mean, overwhelmingly so, when you look at, you still got a U.S. operations
yeah.
and what you can still pour into over there and where the money goes. To those individuals, not organizations,
mm-hmm.
it's you're truly changing lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible, and the financial part of it is so incredible. I geek out about it, just
yeah,
just like
you
Deborah.
Should.
Because the leverage that we have by raising the money here in the U.S. I mean, essentially, if you spend $1, if you guys $1, it saves the world $70. For every dollar that we spend, we're saving $70 in orphan care and funeral costs. And
that's a no-brainer value
right?
proposition, right
so,
there.
It's a pretty good ROI with that,
yeah.
that situation. So, you know, it's sometimes it's a struggle for people to see, like, oh well, you know, it's Kenya. Why not help in your own backyard?
Sure.
And I come personally from working in homelessness for
yeah.
3 years before getting into this, and I was like preaching, like, you know, it's in your own backyard. You know, just look around.
Right.
But I think today more than ever, we're a global community. We're mm-hmm. a global economy,
yeah,
and
we're so connected.
The
yeah.
butterfly effect happens so much more quickly than it
mm-hmm.
used to. If something happens in Kenya, if a nation of leaders isn't raised up in Kenya, we're all going to feel it in 20,
yeah.
25 years.
It's true.
So it's so important, I think. And we have the responsibility, we have the money, and
we have the resources.
And mm-hmm. so
well,
it's a no-brainer.
Well, it's a no-brainer, but you're still one voice in a sea of many people asking for
yeah.
that money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for us to get you guys on the air and just let people know that it is having a direct impact, that's
mm-hmm.
where the money's going. And you depend on individuals. I can see where your revenue is coming from. It's from individuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
these big organizations that are getting behind you.
Yeah.
It's individuals who see a need and want to make a difference. How now? And I'm a big moment guy. Like, what happened in individuals' lives that kind of changed their arc and put them on a certain path? So for you, what made you decide to want to go this route and have a life pursuit in this area?
Yeah. I think it's a lot of things. You know, my husband always laughs at me because every so often I'll be like, what was my purpose? What am I doing? He's like, you're curing AIDS in Africa.
No,
and I'm like, okay, I feel better. But I think, you know, even from the beginning when I was working in homelessness, I was so passionate about it, and I still am very passionate and still involved in that community.
Mm-hmm.
But Care for AIDS was a game changer for me, I think. Because the job opportunity, I guess, came at a certain point in my life where I was realizing a lot of things, and there really is this one aha moment where I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do this either until I die or until I get fired.
So right.
And it was when about a year and a half ago now, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Mm.
And it was really hard for my whole family. It was like right after I've gotten married, my sister just had two baby twins.
Yeah.
We were relying on my mom for a lot. It was like,
yeah.
you know, she'd become our best friend and counselor finally
right.
at this point in our lives. And I remember after her surgery, she ended up having a double mastectomy, and I was staying with her and just thinking, like, oh my God, I don't know what I will do if she doesn't make it. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's that like moment of fear where you're like, I'm a grown woman, right?
Right.
I have a husband, I have two sisters, I have this whole community. But if my mom like leaves me, like,
yeah.
I don't know what will happen in my life, right?
Right.
And then translating that to tens of hundreds of thousands of children in Africa,
right?
Right? Sitting next to their mom
wow.
in bed thinking, what if my mom dies?
Yeah.
And I'm lucky enough to live in America. Like, there's nothing that I've done to deserve the medical care that my mom got, right? It's like a true fluke that I was born here, and you know, my mom had great medical care, and she's great. She's 100% cancer free now, and she's going to live to be, you know, 1,000.
Right. Sure.
And so
it's another whole story.
But you know, I think at that point, I remember being like, you know, I cannot say that there's justice in the world until I have tried to make what I've experienced a reality for everyone in the world, right? Aww. So if I have the opportunity to give one kid their mom back, I'm going to work my whole life to do that, right?
I can't look at you while you're saying that.
Fair enough.
So I think that's the moment. That's where I was like, you know, I was given this just by chance.
Right.
And I have the capacity to help give this to other kids and adults and, you know, whoever.
Sure,
you know, why not?
Wow.
Oh, man.
It's huge.
Yeah, so... not to compare or top that, but so Deb.
Man, okay, Van, I'm going to try and make you cry. No, but I think it's really funny that you said Molly said about your husband, because I think I've asked Jerome that question. What do I do? What am I doing? What am I doing in life? And really, that was the question for the last 3 years. I kept popping around from kind of project to project to project, being the person who's being collaborated with on a project, not the facilitator of the collaboration. It had been, you know, whether I was on a small team creating a development plan for something we did in India or creating a logistics strategy for Tom's, like whatever.
Right.
But I wasn't the person facilitating the conversation. I wasn't the go-to person for advice. I was the person in the weeds. In the trenches with someone. I'm trying to figure out, oh gosh, this isn't working. Am I going to fail? And then I, you know, stumbled into this opportunity where I was working in the home, and it was one of those things where you just have moments in life where things connect with you. And there was this moment after working in one of the homes for like 3 months, I was walking into a meeting and one of the participants was just voicing, you know, concern about something, about how one of the staff hadn't listened or whatever. And she said this comment, and I heard my name. I was like halfway paying attention. She's like, even Deborah stops for 5 minutes and pays attention.
Even Deborah.
But my role wasn't a front day person. I was in the background doing logistics and volunteer coordination and keeping
so
the
that
systems
was a compliment.
Moving.
We'll
it was, but it was one of those moments where you realize you're part of the landscape, where you realize you're like, oh, I've been noticed. Oh, okay. Me being here has value. Me being here has worth. Me being here is a contributor. And so that's what bought me into what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm sold on that now. I'm the one preaching it, that it's in your backyard, because I was working in India and I was going, it's over here. You need to do this versus being connected to local. But I think the idea of supporting local has caught on in ways that are both global and in your own backyard.
Sure.
So, but for me now, what I get to do is this crazy idea 6 months ago that I get to be the facilitator of and utilize all of my experience as a gift that I just got blessed with accidentally to go through all of these different world life experiences that I've just had privilege to do and now be the facilitator of collaboration is key to be able to kind of preach those truths that Jeff preaches to everyone, that you need to keep it moving. You need to keep conversation happening. You need to keep a dialogue around it. And so that's what is exciting to me to do and hear them repeating it back to themselves.
Yeah. Well, there's no right or wrong answer to this question, but so many times we get guests on the show and there's a common denominator. We want to do something bigger than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to know that there are a lot of organizations and people that have that heart in Atlanta, what is it about, because you guys would represent the beginnings of the Gen X or the millennial generation. So what is it about that stereotypical name, which is just a label, but what is it about students coming out of college in the last 10 to 12 years, and definitely now, that do you guys think aren't about creating their own wealth and creating their own empire, but it's about doing for others? What do you think has changed? Is it the country? Is it just, I mean, what's leading people into these types of roles?
I think part of it is, like, Molly and I were talking before we came on the air about how, I mean, I graduated and there wasn't an opportunity necessarily for me because the recession was going on. Mm-hmm. I was smack dab in the middle of it. And so it was really about, you know, picking yourself up by your own bootstraps, really, and figuring out, well, what can I do? How can I contribute? How can I be a part of something versus, oh, I can just go off and, you know, be a part of a private wealth management firm or whatever was going on then. But being really creative, and kind of stepping outside of the box and figuring out what those other opportunities are. And I think that spurred so many, like our friends that we have are, I mean, Hannah, right. for instance. I mean, that you know, The Hive. I mean, there's these opportunities that have come up that aren't business trends, that aren't, you know, food trucks, for instance. Like all of those cool ideas that have popped up over the last 10 years right. by people from our generation. I don't know. I don't know if there's one piece, but I think just the idea that it's okay to be creative and that the status quo isn't status quo anymore. Yeah. And I think that's a trend that came out of the last 10 years.
Yeah. I never had anybody bring up the recession piece, but that did.
Well, we were sort of forced to do our own thing. You guys, right. exactly. And you messed the world up so bad that we have to come back behind
it's
you.
It's true. We screwed up royally.
Thanks, guys.
Has everyone seen that YouTube video, the millennial one?
Yep.
That's all. Yeah.
It's all your fault.
It is.
No, it's but I think that, you know, it was a factor. It might have not been the factor, sure. but it was something that created the way the landscape looked when we were getting set to do, you know, contribute to being adults and contributing to be a part of citizens and like all of those things. Right. It affected how the options we had and affected.
Yeah. And we adapt really well to things. So.
Yeah, apparently. The adaptive generation. So for those that have that heart, how do they get involved with your respective organizations? Where do you need the most help?
Couple of different things. We have, we always need volunteers. We always need people who are looking to advocate for us and not just our organization, but for the cause in Georgia as a whole. Other organizations like Street Grace and Out of Darkness, and they are on the ground being the people who are creating awareness and rescuing also. Hmm. So I think just educating yourself is probably going to be the first step to that.
Speaking of educating yourself, we were at TEDx this year, and I mm-hmm. think your founder, Mary Frances Bowley, she mm-hmm. spoke, and I got to interview her, and there's a great TED Talk that she does about mm-hmm. this issue. If you really want to educate yourself, be more aware, because it's happening every day, and it's happening a lot, and it's easy to turn a blind eye to it and mm-hmm. look at your surroundings and say it's not happening, but I mean, it's terrible. I mean, there's like 13, 14-year-old girls mm-hmm. out there that are just having to do these things. So.
There are, and you know, it really does start with just educating yourself on what your need is in your local community and what's going on, and not just being a citizen, but being an educated citizen about what's going on.
Yeah. So where do people get the most information about?
You can check out our awesome website at www.wellspringliving.org/volunteer, and that's going to be the best way to kind of get plugged in immediately. Our fantastic volunteer coordinator extraordinaire Marissa will be in contact with you within 48 hours.
Including weekends?
No. We like to have semi-healthy boundaries.
Semi-healthy.
She's actually hosting an in-person volunteer training tomorrow.
Okay.
But yeah, give her till Monday. She's amazing. You can check out our Facebook page. You can check out our Twitter. I know, Van, you're going to probably put that stuff up. So check us out there.
Absolutely. But just from an information, mm-hmm. because when people hear sex trafficking,
right.
if they're either aloof to it
or don't understand it,
can you give some kind of understanding just here in Atlanta?
There's a really great resource. It's called Youth Spark. They are amazing. They're here. They're in Georgia, and they aggregate a lot of information.
Okay.
And so it's actually a go-to place where they used to be Future Not a Past, and so now they're Youth Spark.
Okay.
And their website's actually got amazing facts. It's a great aggregate of information. We've got resources on our website, too, under the resource tab to just get better, more educated about the issue as a whole with stats about what's going on here in
Georgia.
Actually,
I have a stat right here that I pulled up, and it's 100 teenage girls mm-hmm. at the average age of 14 are sexually exploited every night in Atlanta.
Yep.
So
Which is crazy, too, because the entry age is 12 to 14.
So it's just saying that 100 every night, so something has to stop.
The problem is bigger than people have any idea.
It is. It's huge, and so trying to figure out which is the best way to kind of go after it is an individual's decision.
Just people need to educate themselves. It only takes
five minutes
of your time to educate this on there. I don't think anyone wouldn't want to help stop this.
No.
So I don't think you go to anyone on the street Mm-mm. and say, hey, do you want to help with this? This is a problem that's going on. They would say, I didn't even know.
Right.
How can I help? So.
And it's really great because here in Georgia, our governor's office of Children and Family Services, they have their own coalition. And they're actually being a part of the collaborative process. We all have task force across all of our different organizations, and we get together monthly and have different projects to keep this conversation moving in an active way.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah.
So Care for AIDS, what's y'all's biggest needs right now, and how can people get involved?
Well, we always say that you can give, pray, and or go.
The slash is in there.
Slash and or. So we take trips of groups of people to Kenya pretty much quarterly. So okay. If you're interested in going, we'll take a group, anywhere from 8 to 12 folks, and we go over for 10 days and work directly with the clients and see a graduation and just kind of get your hands dirty and see what it's all about.
Okay. Now, from a cost standpoint, what is that? What's somebody looking at to make that trip?
Generally, it's going to be $2,000 plus airfare, and that's okay. Everything included. So that's, we'll keep you in our beautiful house. There's even hot water, food, and all that stuff's included. So, and we do all the logistics and everything for that. So if you're interested, you can go to our website, careforaids.org, and it's under Get Involved. And you can also obviously give financially. I mean, something as little as $25. It costs $25 a month
times
to put
70,
a whole so, person yeah. through.
The impact you're making.
Yeah.
So anything, like even a dollar, I mean, anything helps.
Sure.
And pray. I mean, we're a Christian-based ministry. All of us have really strong faith, and even more so in Kenya. They're right. incredible. But just pray for us and for our growth. We're in a time right now of incredible growth, and we could always use people just praying and supporting. And if you want to learn more, just go to our website, contact me. I'd love to sit down and chat more about it.
Definitely. Do you need connections to any other aid-based organizations here in Atlanta just as a mentorship thing?
Oh, we would love that. Yeah, there's... Okay. Atlanta is an incubator of all good things, and so we're always looking to make connections and in the medical world and the missions world anywhere.
Well, I interviewed a guy last week. I think he was the CEO of Aid Atlanta. If you want me to connect you with him,
absolutely, that'd be awesome.
And then if for somebody to realize, hey, I can get out of my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all seem like the perfect entry level for that global development
definitely.
Piece. Anyway, just to give people that insight onto what's going on the other side of the world where you can make a difference here in Atlanta. And once you get into that world, so much stuff's going to open up on how good we have it and how much good you can do for those who don't.
And I think honestly, even when a lot of people go on the trip and they come back, they don't necessarily become, global development experts, but I think it changes the way you even interact with your neighbor. Mm-hmm. I mean, becoming more involved in your global community will inevitably affect the way that you operate in your local community.
Sure.
So
yeah, those trips can be life-changing, I'm sure.
Definitely.
So, and then Wellspring, you guys actually have an event coming up next month.
June 14th, 8:30 a.m., we have a 5K run for one. We need runners.
Okay.
It's in Piedmont Park this year, so it's going to be really exciting.
You don't have to run the whole way. You can walk a little bit, too.
You can come walk.
Pay the money to run, sit on the side and drink a beer, whatever.
You can do that too.
Yeah.
You can even do, I believe there's an option when you register to be a virtual runner. So that you can just make a donation if you want to and not actually break a sweat.
Not call it a donation, a virtual runner.
You are a virtual runner.
You're still running.
I was a runner. I did a 5K.
You ran all over Twitter. That'd be great. And it's the same website, wellspringliving.org/run.
Okay.
Yep.
We'll get that tweeted out as well. Yep. And this whole show will be available to you guys later. We'll have it up on the Emerging Enterprise site. Yeah. You'll get the audio version, but we want to make sure that people connect, so we'll get that out on our webpage as well with all the different ways of getting involved. So thank you so much, and on behalf of Hive, really, for connecting and doing that.
No lonely leader.
No lonely leader. That was amazing. High five. That was great. Y'all have never met each other.
We've never met, but...
Okay. Well, and please hit us up if you know of other organizations that could benefit from coming on air, talking about themselves. Yeah, because this is what this platform is all about, because there's so many in Atlanta that we'd love to connect with.
Mm-hmm. To think about.
Yeah. So feel free to just start spouting them off before we get off the air. You can name drop.
Trivia.
You can name drop. So, well, listen, thanks again for coming. It's my pleasure to meet you guys.
It was great.
Yep. And have, your better half.
Oh, I know. He is so cool.
Yeah.
You guys got to meet him first. I'm kind of jelly about that.
A little jelly.
So we saved the best for last.
That's okay.
Okay.
He gets some credit.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Van Baird, our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Emerging Enterprise.